Yes, hi everyone, and welcome to the final edition of the Keep Up in Qatar podcast, episode 19. This is recording back from where we did one of the first episodes in Souq Waqif. David Wiener with you from Keep Up, the morning after the night before, joined by Tom Smithies, David Davutovic. Bit bleary-eyed, guys. We didn't get a lot of sleep because there was a lot to digest after what was an incredible night in Australian football. So close, yet so far, but still so very memorable.
Incredible to think how much has happened in the last 19 days since we recorded one of our first podcasts here. The Socceroos have changed the face of Australian football in these 18 or 19 days. And, you know, we're kind of hypothesising what may have been had, Garang Kuol scored that late goal, gone into extra time, maybe sitting here, talking about the upcoming game against Netherlands. But not to be, but regardless, the Socceroos were absolutely immense, and I can't wait to see what the spin-offs are for Australian football and for the A-League.
Incredible night, absolutely incredible night, when the world's number three team, one of the favourites for the World Cup, were ran so close to the wire by the Socceroos. At one point, it was 2-0 to Argentina, and we thought this could get messy in the figurative, not the literal sense, or maybe the literal sense too. It could have been 3-4, 5-0, and then that would have been a crying shame as a way to end the World Cup. But in fact, they fought back. They fought back magnificently. And as you say, Garang Kuol had that chance. Aziz Bejic had that amazing run. They were millimetres away from forcing extra time against Lionel Messi and his countrymen. They couldn't quite do it, but my goodness me, they leave the tournament with their heads held high.
So, if you want to listen to a forensic detail breakdown of the match, the previous podcast we did on wherever you listen to your podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, or on YouTube, you can watch it as well. That is there in detail. We're going to go a bit broader today, guys, as we wrap up our experiences here in Doha, in Qatar. A bit different to the first day we were here. There's a bit more activity around in the souk. There's a game of keep up. There's a game of keep up going on to our left. And I mentioned that because last night what we enjoyed was a fan experience as well with the Argentine crowd that was second to none. It was, when you put that into context as well, what the side had to play through to come back from behind, it makes it all the more of a memorable experience.
We may as well have been in downtown Buenos Aires last night, the Bombonera, or wherever the Argentinians play. I mean, I was at the 2014 World Cup. I was lucky enough to see quite a few of Argentina's games. I was at the final. That was really bloody close. The atmosphere there during the game last night, it was really intimidating. It was cauldron-like. I mean, the Socceroos have played in a lot of cauldron-like conditions at this World Cup, but, you know, coming up against Messi, Argentina, two-time world champions, and the fans were just ferocious. Like, they could have shrunk. They could have really struggled in that environment, but they didn't. They really embraced the situation. And as you said, you can go through the breakdown forensically, but it is worth noting those moments of Aziz Bejic, you know, dribbling four or five players, almost scoring. Garang Kuol, the composure to bring that ball down and almost put the ball past Martinez in the Argentina goal. And I have no doubt if it went to extra time, the Socceroos would have been every chance. But they individually and collectively, they will take their experiences now and move forward. And I have no doubt each of their careers will progress.
One thing I just remembered actually from the final moments of the game last night was a point where I suddenly heard a different noise from the crowd. And for a split second, I was like, what's that? Then it's the Australians. There's 1,000 of them in a stadium of 45,000 people, and suddenly they're the ones making noise because the Argentine fans were so scared of what was unfolding.
So, and one thing we probably didn't go into as much detail on in the review podcast, because we've now seen the replay since, hope we don't get knocked off by a ball here, is how good Kuol's turn was. That was the thing with these games. You go, did the Socceroos die wandering? They did not. Aziz Bejic took it on and was denied by an extraordinary block. Kuol, that top turn, he carved the moment out for himself, and the save from Martinez was world class. So it's going to change a lot of things back home. We're going to get to that in a second, and the amazing scenes, it's going to change perceptions globally as well, Tom.
Absolutely. Well, let just so that you know, it's not us cheerleading, I just read you a couple of things from the UK press. This is from the Times. Australia are an incredible story and bowed out with Aussie punch and pride gloriously intact. They are a triumph of mentality over pedigree, the Australians, a collection of A-League and Scottish Premiership players pushing one of the World Cup's contenders to the very wire. They don't care who they play against. They stick to their game plan, their togetherness, their up-and-at-em 4-4-2 guns. That's from Jonathan Norcroft, who's the football correspondent of The Times. In The Guardian, meanwhile, we've got this also brilliant stuff about the way that the Australia played. What did you expect Australia to do? Sit down and accept their fate? This Australia, with its stalwarts, its journeymen, Australia took the hard road to Qatar and they took the hard road out. They may not be stuffed with household names. They may have been given the runaround by the world's greatest player, but they left every piece of themselves on that pitch. The wild exuberance of Argentina's celebrations gave the game away. They knew they'd been in a war.
And Lionel Messi said himself after the game, "We were made to suffer at the end." Lionel Messi, the GOAT, the seven-time Ballon d'Or winner, said, "Australia made us suffer." That's where, if it did go into extra time, who knows what could have happened. But extraordinary performance. And we noticed it over the last few days, probably after that Tunisia win, we noticed a lot more international media turning up to the Australia press conferences, all of a sudden being somewhat curious about the Socceroos, the national team, watching it on the local beIN Sports coverage here in Qatar. A lot more discussion around Australia.
What were they saying?
Well, just the fact that they were talking about Australia, like, that's the thing. We've been irrelevant at the last few World Cups, you know. 2014, even though they lost, I think a lot of people were talking about Australia with their, you know, attacking offensive performances, you know, the Cahill, you know, world-class goal. 2006, they were clearly talking about us. But this time, there was just a lot of curiosity from the international media around the Australian team.
And a lot of the narratives at the World Cup ended up going nowhere. The you know, look at Saudi Arabia. They shocked the world by beating Argentina and didn't go through. Australia lost their first game 4-1. Everyone assumed, oh, they're just here to make up the numbers.
But this is the beauty of the World Cup, right? So here you've got these, a couple of chaps on drums, one with a Brazilian flag, one with a French flag, and, you know, Australian football is on par with these global giants. And it's so exciting to see what the fallout will be from this, because I have no doubt, you know, we're in a period of time where our players aren't playing in the biggest and best leagues in the world. And yes, we want the A-League to prosper, but we also want that mix of, you know, players playing locally and doing well in a really strong local competition. But you want your players up in those big five leagues, playing in the Premier League, in La Liga. And, I have no doubt there'll be more curiosity around Australian players. And, you know, perhaps some of the transfer values also increase.
A couple of points there. One, I think we've got a new show when we go back to Australia, which is just Tom reading out the newspapers, which was riveting stuff.
More stats. He loves his stats, doesn't he?
Second thing is, the thing that was a pinch yourself moment, I think, for all Australian football fans last night, was when you get the draw against Argentina, Lionel Messi, and you go, right, well, we're going to be in the knockout phase, we're going to go and have the biggest stage of all. The press contingent that was there, I jest, Tom, but you looked around the area that we were in and it was packed. Every one of the elite global football personalities that works in the media was there. Now, they were there obviously for the Messi juggernaut, but the sideshow for the Messi juggernaut was the Socceroos, who became a central part of that.
They were there for the Duke juggernaut as well, don't worry about that.
Yeah. So they were there for that, but then the flip side of that is transitioning to at home. So the global audience sees Australia, and then the Australian audience sees this absolute behemoth that we are at the centre of. We are a focal part of it, and we're in the final 16 dancing with this calibre of people and competed with them. So you touched on it, Dave, in terms of transfer value, and there's no doubt, like Harry Suter, Rio Ferdinand spoke about him in the pre-game show in England. Harry Suter is going to get a move because his performances here, even last night, was top class. Named in the Independence team of the group stage, voted by the BBC fans in the team of the group stage. Who else is going to put their foot forward for a move based on these performances?
Well, the beauty of this World Cup for the Socceroos was that 20 of the 26 players featured. So, you know, you compare that with the last World Cup, I think only 16 played, and I think, Tommy, it was pretty much the same 11 every game, except Andrew Nabut in the last game got injured. You know, Tommy Juric got a start, so...
And you say I love stats.
I'm just trying to... You've inspired me, Tom.
Well, thank goodness this is the last day, because I don't know what I'd do between these two with another day.
But it wasn't like, yes, he did kind of stick Graham Arnold, that is, with the first 11, but the players who came off the bench actually played important roles. You look at Keanu Backus, who, you know, was fantastic off the bench, worked himself into a start. Garang Kuol, who comes on last night and almost scores that goal. He's never started an A-League game. Yes, his future's sorted with that transfer to Newcastle, but he's got to get a loan move because he doesn't have a work permit. So all of a sudden, I reckon, you know, he probably locks in his next move. But look, I think there's a number of players who, it depends what their, you know, what their ambitions are. You look at someone like Craig Goodwin, who was outstanding. Two A-League goals. Don't worry about the official FIFA stats. They gave it as an own goal last night. We here at the A-Leagues and Keep Up are officially awarding that one to Craig Goodwin. He could go overseas, but to be honest, unless he lands a top European move, I think he's happy playing at home for his hometown club, Adelaide United, as is Matthew Lecky at Melbourne City. And you know what? This World Cup's shown that the A-League is a good enough platform for them to strut their stuff and then go on and take on the world's best.
I reckon there's two aspects to this. Number one, at home, the Australian audience has woken up to and been shown that there's a bunch of quality footballers on their doorstep who, in some cases, they should go and enjoy, like Goodwin and Lecky, for the next few years, most likely. But there are the kids who come through, like Kuol. We know he's leaving. There are others who will leave and be sold overseas, and that plays into the second part. That is something we should celebrate. It puts the A-League firmly in the international football ecosystem, where scouts start to go, okay, that could be a good source of talent based on this World Cup. There are players like Keanu Backus. If I was a scout from a Dutch team, maybe I'd be looking at that guy thinking, the intelligence he played with, the pockets of space he took up, the way that he was not overawed at all. The Guardian play-by-play account last night was talking about the number of tackles that the Backus was winning against Messi. Mm. There are others, as is Bejic. Again, he's playing for the team that are bottom of the Scottish Premier League. He can play on a bigger stage. He came of age. I know it's ridiculous, a man of 50-odd caps, but he came of age in this tournament and is surely going to be lined up by a better club.
He was immense. I mean, he is the other side of 30, which obviously is a big factor when clubs are looking at players. But look, Kai Rowles was immense. He got better with every game. And a bit like Kuol, every time he's tested, he's thrown in the deep end. Like, yes, Rowles made mistakes. There was that moment against Tunisia, I think it was, where he let the ball bounce and fell over and they almost capitalised. But, you know, Harry Soutar was there to mop up. But he'll learn from that. He won't do that again. That same situation happens, he'll clear it, or, you know, he'll do whatever he has to do. But, you know, in terms of those younger guys, Keanu Backus, absolutely. He's got another gear in him, another move in him. Kai Rowles, Riley McGree as well, you know, was super consistent, didn't have that real breakout moment, maybe aside from that assist to Matthew Lecky in the Denmark game. But he's playing for Middlesbrough in the Championship. He's definitely got upside in him as well.
Exciting stuff for all of those players. Exciting stuff at home. We've seen the scenes. We've seen the scenes across the country. The players have seen the scenes across the country. Whilst it was a privilege to be here, it's also a privilege to work in a sport we're going to come back to and be involved with in Australia. I want to talk to you guys about the opportunity. What has to happen now? What can this game harness? We've been there once before in 2006. Different context now. What happens over the next 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years? Based on what we've seen, where Australia turned up in their thousands, tens of thousands, to support the Socceroos?
What began to take root, I think, over the last few days, the last couple of weeks, is the culture of watching football and getting the emotion that you get from your team going through the highs and the lows, doing amazing things, albeit on a big screen in the case of Australians back there. But let's not forget that in just a few months' time, we have another World Cup coming to Australia. And then you are going to have, I know so many people who bought tickets to random games just because it's a World Cup, it's top quality football. So we have this period where it's going to become the norm to watch football and create that culture of watching football, which we've had with the A-Leagues in the past, you know, the Del Piero years, the early years of the A-League, and we know that the interest is there. And now over the next few months, the A-League can capitalise on that culture really starting to be embedded and taking root. We've already got things like the Liberty A-League Pass, where people can go and watch any Women's League game. Any junior kid can go and watch for free. Watching football is one of those exciting things about having a football culture. And I think it's just something that we can now awaken.
The football culture is a really interesting word you use, because
we're getting into some dangerous areas here.
Well, we're not going to. Well, I'm not going to put a time limit on us, but the thing that really resonated with me, and I wrote about it in my On the Whistle report yesterday, was whilst we were in awe of the Argentina fans and what they brought to the stadium en masse, we can't underestimate what our fans did back home. You don't turn up on that number if you don't have a football heartbeat, if you don't have a pulse and a love of the game. And you said to me, we don't have a football culture. I show you the video that's on the A-League social account that combines all of those fan parts.
I never said that.
No, not you. The rhetorical question. I'm talking to the sky. You don't give me that football culture. We've got it. It's just about harnessing it.
Those scenes could have been anywhere around the world. They were phenomenal scenes, from Sydney to Melbourne, Amy Park, 20,000 people there. I mean, fair dinkum. We were seeing those unfold during the game, and we were proud as punch, you know, let alone the players. But, you know, culture's a really interesting one, because, you know, culture is not just about, you know, the fans, the supporters. You know, today and over the next few days and weeks, I think there's going to be a lot more kids going out on the streets, in the backyard, kicking the balls around, and that is so important when it comes to youth development. The PFA did a fantastic study a few years ago titled Culture Amplifies Talent, and it was based on the Golden Generation, and they found with extensive research that a lot of those guys play twice as much unstructured football as structured, you know, i.e. training and at their clubs. So that's happening less these days, but hopefully, and we're in a perfect period, you know, the World Cup's usually in the middle of winter, now we're in summer, you know, kids can go out there, they're about to go on school holidays, they can go out there, kick balls around, and this can be a moment in time where I think a lot of kids, you know, you listen to Jackson Irvine talking about 2005, the Uruguay win, being in the stands, going to watch all those games, you know, six. I think there'll be thousands of kids out there in Australia, young kids, and we saw so many young faces there who will look back to this moment in 10, 12, 15 years' time when they're making their Socceroos debut, A-League men's debut, and saying, you know what, that generation of players, Mitch Duke, etc., inspired me.
Well said, and the thing with that is, look at the age profile of this team. As the France supporters come past us, and they've got a golden generation.
We almost got them.
The age profile of the current team, how old were they when the golden generation was coming through? They were tangibly inspired by it. I think I might have mentioned on this show, you know, I heard some stories from home. My wife is a PE teacher, and she said that she called me while watching kids on the playground calling out the names of Goodwin and Sutar and Lecky in the group stage, because that's who they were imitating. The other really interesting thing to talk about is things like little anecdotes we've heard, like jersey sales. The Rebel Sport running out of jerseys for the Socceroos because they're running like hotcakes off the streets. And I expect when I go back home and go to the park, we're going to see a different profile of colour in the playground.
But there's also another really important point here, that you talk about the unstructured play. We want kids out there just kicking the ball around and mimicking Mitch Duke's header, Craig Goodwin's finish against France, etc. But they've got to have places to do that. And I know that, like, part of Sydney where I live in, a lot of the open space is jealously guarded by clubs because that's where they play and train. But there's a council-run AstroTurf pitch. My boys and a bunch of their mates quite often go and book it for free, and they'll spend 2 hours. They are just kicking a ball. They are just running and kicking a ball, and there's got to be more facility for that, more open space, and more, those futsal courts are ideal, but places where kids can just learn and kick a ball, because the best way to learn to play football is to feel it on your foot.
And, you know, we've seen in a nutshell the power of the sport, and the beauty of this is, and it was great that you mentioned the Liberty A-League women's competition, Tom, because we've got the FIFA Women's World Cup coming up on home soil. That will be a really momentous and important bookend for this tournament. So July, August next year, we've got the Liberty A-League season coming up. And you know what? We're talking about the culture and kids going out on the street. Boys can play with girls. They can kick the ball around together. And that's not possible in every sport where, you know, the physical advantages are obviously, you know, a lot more prevalent. But you know, you also look at this group of players in the A-League men's competition, which is, you know, impeccably timed, restarting next week. You know, I think six of the, or five of the eight A-League players featured in this tournament. Goodwin and Lecky are pretty gassed. I'm not sure if they'll be starting next week. I think the fans will excuse the coaches if they do start them on the bench. But, you know, all of a sudden, I remember that 2006 golden generation. You know, in the ensuing years, they slowly came back. Aloisi, Kewell, Cahill a little bit later, Popovich, Craig Moore, etc. And they were all, you know, marquee signings in some way, shape or form. All of these guys, even though they're not playing at the same level, the big five leagues, their profiles have exploded. So all of a sudden, your Degeneks and your Irvines and your Bailey Wrights and whoever they are, if and when they come back to the A-League in the next few years, you know, that will give the league and their respective clubs a real shot in the arm.
And they're good humans and good advocates. Yeah. So they're good ambassadors for the game. And they can come back and they might not have... I remember when the likes of Aloisi came back and all of a sudden friends and family... Yeah, we're really
Central
like...
Coast.
Yeah, that's John Aloisi. He's playing in our league. It'll have a different effect. But what they can do is they can help on this mission. They can help on this Pied Piper effect that we want to take with people. And the other point about that you made, a brilliant point, Tom, and you've lived it because you've got young kids as well, about the space to play, is there's a lot more advocacy. I'm seeing a lot more people standing up and making comments bullishly in the press, talking about the fact of sort of the rate per participation that football and even basketball get compared to the other sports. And I think this performance and also the global performance of both those national teams is going to start to change the dial. We saw the sports minister was here. I know politics is an interesting game because it depends and fluctuates on who's in government. But the conversation is now slightly more front and centre than it was. And guys like Mark Schwarzer, Harry Kuehl...
Bogut was tweeting about it yesterday.
Andrew Bogut. They're getting on the front foot. And I think we've got to drive this discussion going forward for the development of our game. Gents, as we wrap up, I want to get some final thoughts from you guys just about your afflictions of your time here, both at the Socceroos, about the World Cup in general, about this environment. It started off, we did a piece here on one of the first nights where we said we couldn't find a game. It's changed a little bit since then as the fans have rolled in. Let's just wrap up by telling the listeners and the viewers about our experience here, because ultimately, for all the controversy, for all the global media coverage, we've enjoyed a pretty spectacular football tournament that is just starting to reach its crescendo.
The World Cup of 2022 has been an interesting experience. It's the closest, from an Australian team point of view, that I've experienced to 2006, in which a team creates magic and it creates something above and beyond itself. It takes on a life of its own, this wonderful narrative of getting into the round of 16. It was so unexpected. And in that sense, you know, we had moments in 2014 when Australia took the lead against Holland. We thought something magical could be unfolding, but unfortunately they couldn't sustain it. And that was, by the end of that game, they were out of the tournament. This time the magic has sustained and they, as I say, took on a life of its own. It has been absolutely wonderful to see that. The other high points for me have been the local people here, the welcoming, the hospitality. I still say it's a synthetic World Cup that's been sort of bolted onto to somewhere that's not equipped to host it. But in spite of that, some wonderful narratives, some fantastic stories. Seeing Saudi Arabia beat Argentina, see Germany losing, to see Spain for about 5 minutes, Spain were going out. There's been some footballing wise, there's been some wonderful narratives, and we're just scratching the surface now at the beginning of the round of 16.
Yeah, a lot was made of Qatar hosting this World Cup and, you know, the appalling human rights record and whatnot, which, you know, we're told has improved and we hope it does continue to improve. Certainly my experience, my first-hand experience here, and I've never been to Qatar, the hospitality has been first class, the food's been amazing. And a lot of the people working here have really... relished this opportunity and loved, you know, meeting so many different people around the world, which World Cups offer. Having the World Cup here has definitely changed the course of the tournament. I think it has played into the hands of countries like Australia and some of the more unfancied nations, if you like, particularly from Asia and Africa. And I think that's a good thing. The football has been great. I think the conditions have been perfect. Certainly the games that have been played later, and that's how it'll unfold throughout the knockout phase. There's been drama, there's been excitement. But to Tom's point, the Socceroos legacy is the one that will stand out for mine. It's been an immense tournament. I did not see this coming. I did not expect this. And, you know, we are objective in a sense and whatnot, but, you know, the way these Socceroos boys have, you know, conducted themselves on and off the field, you know, couldn't be prouder. Like, they've just been bloody immense. And as we've discussed off air numerous times, top blokes, and they absolutely deserve everything that's coming their way.
Well, they've also helped create that narrative themselves because they've been very generous in their media opportunities, in the sense that the media opportunities are compulsory, but their performances in them have been genuine and authentic, and they've shown their personalities, they've engaged with the media, they've done a really delightful job in that sense, and it's allowed the travelling press pack to actually share their stories back home. As the fans have arrived here, hello, we have a live stream going on of our show.
We're going global as well.
Yeah, exactly. I hope we'll be very polite in the next few minutes too. Thank you. As the fans have rolled into a small environment, I think that's created an interesting atmosphere too. The ability to have colour packed into central locations, yeah. But also the ability to see multiple games. Twice, once you did it, once I did it, we saw both Australia's group games in a day. That's quite a remarkable thing. You cannot do that. You will not be able to do that the next World Cup across three countries in Mexico, Canada and America. So that's been a once in a lifetime experience from a World Cup point of view as well. But otherwise, echo your boys' sentiments on our experiences here. Really interesting to see what happens with all the infrastructure they've built here in the years to come, because they've got some massive stadiums. Anytime you go to a game, you pass four stadiums.
We'd be happy to take a stadium or two in Australia, to be honest. But going back to the investment in football, you know, that's another area where we need support from governments, state and federal governments, in terms of, you know, investing in stadium and infrastructure, training facilities, etc. But I digress. It's been a fantastic World Cup, and a shame it has to end here and now.
Well, it's only just beginning from a general point of view. I actually will end with a fire starter based on what you just said, because Graham Arnold did mention the investment last night in his press conference, took the question and made a really big statement on it, basically again driving that conversation in a really public forum about what the game needs to compete with the other Asian nations. And by the way, I think that's another takeaway from this tournament as well, is with all the transfers in world football and how small the football world has become, you're seeing that now with the World Cup, where, you know, Japan and even Costa Rica in the same group as Spain and Germany can almost flip it on its head and have both the European powerhouses almost go out within the same group. The gap is getting smaller, which is making it more fascinating and more exciting. But so Graham Arnold spoke about the future of the sport. He also spoke about his own future. He doesn't know what he's going to do next. So it's a really interesting time for Australian football, in that the discussion about what happens next to the Socceroos, how you keep this momentum going, is interesting. Whether Graham Arnold and the FA come to an agreement, whether both parties want it, whether one does, one doesn't. We're going to go back and talk about the players. We're going to go back and talk about the coaches, because we know it's a really good cohort of Australian coaches. And in the next period, the discussions about the future of the Socceroos leadership is going to come up as well.
It's a good point. Last but not least, Graham Arnold deserves huge kudos for what he's done. He's broken all records, the first coach in Australian football history to get two wins at a World Cup, first clean sheet, etc. There would have been times throughout his career that he would have doubted whether he could get to this level. The start of his Socceroos coaching tenure, albeit on an interim basis in 2007, was hugely underwhelming. He had a fantastic, you know, 10-year apprenticeship with then Soccer Australia, Football Australia, then he went on and coached in the A-League. What he's done here will do his confidence absolute wonders, and also for all of the Australian coaches. We have never been in a stronger period with Aussie coaches, with Ange Postecoglou, Kevin Muscat, so on and so forth, doing amazing things around the world. So that's another really important legacy from this World Cup.
I think it's important to note that there's not likely to be any rush, because there's no Socceroos games scheduled for quite a while. There may not be any for the first part of next year. There's the Asian Cup in January 2024. But really, the cohort of players is established. As we just said, the ages of those players, all of them are going to go through. The squad is there. The squad is battle-hardened. Whether it's Graham Arnold or somebody else, I don't think anyone's going to rush into a decision to work out who's next.
Gents, thank you for your time here today. It's nice to have come full circle and back to Suquakif to end off where we started.
Been a pleasure, boys.
It's been great. We hope you've enjoyed the launch, really, of Keep Up into the Australian football media with what we want to do.
This squad hasn't done badly either.
We said we were the oldest and the ugliest, and we're going to come back even more old and even more ugly by the end of this trip. We've really loved bringing it to you across the app, across the audio mediums and even on YouTube if you've stuck the distance and watched this to the end, which I'm very impressed if you have. Dave, Tom, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the World Cup, guys. It's going to be a fantastic climax. Who knows who's going to win? It's going to be a brilliant conclusion. Stick around. Do not unsubscribe from this feed, because this feed will turn back into the official Isuzu Ute A-League podcast brought to you by Ned. So the content is going to keep pumping out from the Keep Up Studios and the Keep Up Audio Network. We'll see you back in Australia, boys. And until next time, enjoy your football. Enjoy all the World Cup action.